Hello, everyone. I'm Therese Bottomley, editor of The Oregonian and Oregon Live. This is Beat Check with The Oregonian. Today, I'm talking to reporter Ted Sickinger about Oregon's public employee retirement system, otherwise known as PERS. Ted, welcome back to Beat Check.
Thanks, Therese.
So Ted has covered PERS for a long time, and it's always been a bit of an albatross for state government, with a large shortfall between what money is owed to retirees and eventual retirees who work in state government, and how much the system has in investments. The shortfall is quite large, and that has a direct effect on local government budgets. So let's start with the basics. Ted, what's PERS?
So, as you said, it stands for Public Employee Retirement System, and it was a retirement system signed into law by legislators in 1945. So it's 80 years old at this point, and at that point, it was a money match retirement program, which refers to the original retirement formula established to calculate member benefits. And we'll get into some of the specifics of that later, but that legacy formula is really the root of the funding shortfall that the system faces today. So this is a defined benefit pension system where benefits are based on a formula. And at this point, most employees' benefits are calculated on an employee's years of service and their final pay and benefit factor that targets a final percentage of pay. It used to be 50% after 30 years. Now it's 45%, and employees also get Social Security, which some other pension systems, public pension systems, or employees don't. It's quite different and typically more generous than a defined contribution 401k that a lot of listeners are probably familiar with. Defined benefits are pretty rare these days, but they're still common in the public sector, and a lot of the public sector plans have funding deficits. So there's about 900 employers around the state that participate in the systems. Those are cities, counties, police departments, fire and water districts, really, you know, the gamut of the public sector. And there are 400,000 members, about 163,000 of them already retired. Another 190,000 active employees and 53,000 who are no longer in public employment but haven't started taking benefits yet. And last year, the system paid about $4.6 billion in retirement benefits to folks living in Oregon and more than $6 billion in total.
And Ted, state employees and public employees would say that they gave up other benefits or raises because of getting a better retirement plan. So, you know, this system was, negotiated and bargained for and so forth. So where we are now, you gave a good overview, but what is owed and what is the shortfall?
I don't know what the liability number is exactly. I could find it, but don't have it in front of me. But the current shortfall was $28.4 billion at the end of last year, and that came after a couple years of poor investment returns. And that's the largest absolute dollar deficit that the system has ever had, although its funded status has been a little worse before. So the way that's expressed is they have 73 cents in assets currently for every dollar in liabilities. That's been as low as 69 cents and as high as 105 cents for every dollar in liabilities back at the end of 2001. Investment returns are really the key to this, as all the contributions that government employers make to the system go into the fund. They're invested to meet future liabilities, and those investment returns end up paying about 3/4 of the system's benefits.
And let's talk about that, because that plays into my next question, which is why the average Oregonian cares. You talked about all these districts and public agencies that are part of PERS, you know, school districts and so forth. And so what is the effect on Oregonians when PERS has this shortfall?
Well, right now it means that a big portion of the taxes that they're paying to support state and local government are going to cover the costs of digging out of this funding hole and not to cover services. the PERS board resets contribution rates for government employers every other year. And that's about 900 employers again, and they pay it every year as a percentage of their total payroll. And those rates are based on the costs of, you know, say, the benefits that occur in every given year. And then there's an additional percentage rate added on for repaying the current deficit, supposedly over a 20-year period. So at present, the average rate for employees is about 25% of payroll, and it's slated to go up to 27% next biennium, which is July 2025. So payroll is the largest expense of most public employers. And again, you got 25 cents of every payroll dollar being spent to cover pension expenses. That's a ton of money that isn't going to services. And projected contributions in the next biennium are more than $6 billion collectively, again, over a two-year period. And a big portion of that cost is associated with the unfunded liability and, again, would be otherwise spent on services.
So if you're a school district and your pension, your liability to PERS goes up, then you have less money to spend on hiring additional teachers or classroom aides or anything along those lines.
Correct. And you know, some of the rate increase that I just described is due to the pay raises that teachers got after recent strikes. Because if you have higher pay, the pensions associated with that higher pay are also higher. So, you know, there has to be a, or there is a kind of a equivalent reaction on that level.
So huge public interest. It has a lot of effect on a lot of public agencies. It affects a lot of people's tax dollars and how they're spent. So I just want to go through very briefly a little bit of history with our interest in PERS. We used to routinely report on people's PERS benefits when, say, a mayor or a school superintendent would retire. To us, it's similar to the public salary that they were receiving. And then PERS started withholding that information and saying it was confidential. We appealed to the Attorney General under the state public records law, and we won that case. The Attorney General ordered the information to be made public. But PERS took the unusual step, very unusual step, of disregarding the advice of the state government's top lawyer, the Attorney General, and instead hired an outside law firm at public expense to try to keep the benefit information confidential. After a bunch of back and forth in court, we eventually settled with PERS, and the agency agreed to release much of the information we had asked for. And ever since, we've published a database of recipients each year and done a little bit of analysis of that. And you just published this year's update on OregonLive.com. And what did you find interesting looking back at the 2023 database?
So every year we try to provide context in terms of, you know, the average and median benefits of the new retirees, who some of the new top beneficiaries are, how they compare to top beneficiaries in the system from previous years. And we also look at any outliers that are representative of some of the system's underlying funding problems. So just to give you a sense, last year the average benefit for nearly 6,000 retirees that were added to the pension rolls was about 31,000 annually. And again, that as a percentage of their final pay, that's about 42%. And their average length of service was just over 20 years. And the pensions range from, you know, anywhere from $1,100 annually to more than $200,000, you know, a median of about $24,000 a year. There were 143 new retirees with annual benefits of more than $100,000 a year. And that was only 2% of the entire group. System-wide, that's, you know, it's closer to 3% of all retirees. The top beneficiary last year was a woman named Betty Yada, who was a former deputy district attorney from Multnomah County. Her pension is $208,000 a year, and like others, she'll get a 2% COLA on that for as long as she is taking it, or cost of living adjustment, And that came for her after 45 years of public service. It amounted to about 98% of her final pay. And again, it is important to note that Oregon's public employees are also eligible for Social Security. And that's typically targeted about 25% of your final pay.
So the top earners, you know, over the years, the first year we looked at the database, it was Mike Bawati, former University of Oregon coach and athletic director. I believe Joe Robertson of OHSU is a top earner. Those really make interesting headlines. But, you know, what I think your reporting has emphasized, they really are the outliers. The folks that you mentioned getting $31,000, that might be much more representative of the average PERS retiree. And I think readers sometimes get unhappy with us because they feel like we're emphasizing everybody on PERS is living the high life when, you know, in fact, you've shown through your reporting that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. They're outliers. I mean, they had either huge earnings while they were in the system that's based on, and that can really jack things up. Even with the formula retirement at 50% of, you know, 1.7 million or something is, you know, ends up being a lot of money. And the money match to formula, which we'll discuss, has generated some of those. But again, the average or the median benefit last year was about $24,000. So, you know, some of these Protion packages are they're a very different thing.
Yeah. So let's talk about the pain points. There are a couple things that you've mentioned over the years: the guaranteed return, the money match, the things that really drove some of these larger packages. And a lot of, you know, people get frustrated, but a lot of those past practices have been dealt with. So why don't you talk about how we got to this point and what's changed?
Yeah, so I mean, you sort of said that the top earners are outliers, and that's correct, but they're also not the root cause of the fiscal pain the system is causing at this point. What's causing that is sort of outsized benefits and resulting massive liabilities that were granted to average members of the system who were working 4 and 5 decades ago. That has been at least partially addressed by the legislature, but we'll still be paying off the liabilities it created for decades. Just as an example, in 2000, the average member of the system with 30-year service, which is sort of defines a career employee, was retiring with 100% of their final salary. And that's double what legislators has been contemplating when they put the full formula retirement in place in 1981. And some members were making far, far more, you know, 200 to 600% of their final pay. And all that is courtesy of the money match formula. You know, I kind of like to call that the system's Franken formula. And it went haywire in the last 2 decades. In the 1980s and 1990s. And this is a little wonky, but here's how it works. The money match is based on the balance in an employee pension account when they retire. And that includes the 6% of payroll contributions employees were making prior to 2003 and the earnings that were credited on those dollar amounts in the accounts due to the system's annual investment earnings. And the reason this formula got so crazy is that from 1975 on, Tier 1 employees were guaranteed, and those are hired before 1996. There's a big cohort of employees there that were guaranteed an annual rate of return on their account equal to the system's assumed earnings rate, which was generally 7.5 to 8% at that time. And when the markets did better, the PERS board, which at that point was dominated by public employees, ended up crediting most of those earnings to member accounts as well. So, you know, the pension fund's investment did beautifully between 1980 and 2000. That ballooned the balance of those member accounts. And then the sort of the final twist on this formula is that when an employee retires, as the money match name implies, their employer doubles their account balance, and then PERS converts it into an annuity, a monthly payment, assuming that the employee continues to earn the system's assumed earnings rate on the balance in their account while they draw it down in retirement. So these member accounts exploded. It inflated an entire cohort of employees' benefits. And, you know, it was the legislature's financial mistake. And, you know, the PERS board stoked the fire. And this was the money match was the original formula in the system. And the legislature in 1981 adopted this full formula because the money match wasn't generating adequate benefits. But they left this thing in place, and it kind of became this improvised explosive device in the system that went off when those huge financial returns came through. And that is kind of the money match in a nutshell.
Wow. Okay. And then, you know, one of the things you've noted in the past was the top earners being dominated by OHSU, and that's not just because of their state salaries, right? I mean, sometimes PERS benefits are based on things beyond just the salary.
Well, I mean, largely with the OHSU retirees, it's because they have long tenures and large salaries. When you get that big a salary, even the full formula creates a really large pension. The doctors used to handle their clinical income through a separate practice group that they owned. That was outside the university, but OHSU wanted to tax that revenue for overhead. So it went through a merger with the practice group, and it changed all that. So now all the clinical income was running through the university, and it inflates, you know, doctors' pensions if they have a substantial clinical practice. Johnny Delashaw, who's kind of an infamous back surgeon up at OHSU, was one guy that just brought in an enormous amount of business. And, you know, prior to that, and anything but their academic appointment, you know, that would have been their total income. But now the practice income came through. The same thing kind of happened with, you know, Mike Bellotti. He had a relatively low salary from the university, but the university was funneling season ticket sales and some Nike endorsement contracts, country club memberships, the cars that people were providing to Bellotti for free down in Eugene. All that income flowed through and was part of his pension calculation. And there are various things we reported over the years of, you know, just sort of average members, firemen, for instance, really inflating their overtime to jack up their pay. You know, the system has a bunch of enhancements that you can, you know, it's for used sick leave and vacation pay that can enhance a member's final salary and their pension. This is a very, very complicated system. And the people who run it down in Tigard are saints because the legislature continues to change it. And every time they do, it has all these ripple effects through the system in terms of administration. But I've been reporting on this for the last, 15 years, and I still go back to them with basic questions. You know, I'm probably one of the more knowledgeable people in Oregon about how this thing works, but it still flummoxes me periodically.
Yeah, it's very complex. And, you know, you mentioned a few of the rules that allowed people to figure out ways to boost their final pension. There's nothing illegal about what they were doing. It was all according to the system that was set up. And I spoke to someone recently who was unhappy about being featured, and she emphasized, and I agreed with her, that she had done nothing wrong. There's nothing untoward about her case, but it was unusual. And that was the case of a person who ended up getting about six times her final salary she was making in PERS, even more than former Governor Barbara Roberts, who had also served in the legislature, even though she had ended up with a pretty low salary and really hadn't worked for the state that long. So talk about that unusual case.
Yeah, and I understand the reluctance that people have to be featured. I think this is a kind of an institutional decision we make. We are generally not in favor of anonymizing any sources. We spent a lot of money and time and effort to get this database. And these are real people with real pensions, with real situations that if you anonymized it, it would really, you know, flatten these stories, I think. And I don't think I've ever had anybody approach me and say they've been doxxed or, you know, threatened or anything else as a result of us writing about their pension benefit. In this instance, it was a case of someone who had a really brief career with the state, less than 10 years, and they're still earning a pension of more than $40,000 annually, because when they left public employment back in 1980, they left their employee account in the system. And all those dynamics that I was describing earlier about the money match were at work. And due to the magic of compound interest and the sort of ridiculous generosity of the money match formula, it popped out this pension that not only is more than Robert's, but, you know, more than most members can hope to earn after a much longer career. And, you know, just for comparison purposes, and not to this person or anyone else, you know, if you had to go out in the commercial market and buy an annuity to generate the kinds of annual payouts that the money match was creating, you'd have to, you know, put in many cases more than $1 million into an account to generate that level of income. And so PERS was literally minting millionaires every year back then. And the PERS board was not requiring and hasn't since required employers to fully fund the system by jacking the contribution rates up. I mean, as high as they aren't high enough to be making headway on this liability. And just to go back to your original question, no, she didn't do anything wrong. She simply did, you know, she lived by the system rules. This is what it churned out.
And the board, of course, has changed over the years. It's not the same people responsible Correct. For the whole shebang. But who's on the board now and kind of what they, you don't have to go person by person, but give us a sense of the expertise of the folks on the board. And what are they talking about now in terms of solving for the future here?
You know, there isn't a lot of, I don't think there's a ton of discussion about the unfunded liability at this point. I mean, they reset the system assumptions every 2 years when they're, you know, doing evaluation of the system. That includes a couple key decisions, you know, what the assumed earnings rate on the fund is going to be, and that has a major effect on the system's funded status and employee contributions as a result. They have been routinely criticized for keeping that number way too high for way too long. They have since ratcheted down from 8% to 6.9%, but there are a lot of folks who believe that that number should be a lot lower, and we should be driving a lot more money into the system. The PERS board, you know, has acted to protect public employers from the full brunt of this funding deficit. It collars the rates. In other words, it doesn't allow them to go up by the amount they otherwise would. It limits the increases and the decreases, but it's mostly been increases in recent years that can take place. So, I mean, it is a, you know, a very different board than was in place in the 1980s and 90s when all these earnings were being credited to member accounts. But they're still subject to some of the same political pressures. And they, of course, don't drive, you know, the discussion in the legislature about changes that could be made. I'm not really aware of anything being discussed right now by the legislature. And again, it's important to note the legislature, lawmakers are beneficiaries of this system, as are the courts and the judges who passed, you know, muster on some of the changes and generally have not allowed, you know, some of the more significant changes that the legislature has sought to make as this deficit has blown up. anyway, at this point, I think I'm rambling away from your question.
No, but I think it's a rock and a hard place, right? If the PERS board did actually require local governments to fund at the level they need to for when they're looking at this shortfall, that would gut the budgets of these school districts and cities and so forth, right? I mean, it's a rock and a hard place. So,
yeah, yeah. And those are very strained by the current level of contributions. And, you know, the mission statement of the PERS board is to maintain, you know, steady, predictable rates. It's also to maintain the funded status of the system. Some of its mission statements are in conflict with one another. We just haven't made a whole lot of headway.
Yeah.
And the legislature, I think, at this point is exhausted with this. The courts have seriously curtailed the changes that they have tried to make in the past. And I think there's a sense of we're just going to have to live with this and live with this until the system has digested these beneficiaries with the bigger benefits. The normal cost of the system is quite reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this, you know, unfunded liability cost. And, you know, literally you have to have a die-off of older members before this annual, for the funding deficit and the contribution rates come down significantly.
Well, it is a daunting problem. We thank you for all of your reporting on it. You are, as you said, you're one of the most expert people in the state on the system. And, you know, we've dedicated so many hours to this because it is so important to public governments around the state and to services that Oregonians rely on. So excellent job. Thank you so much, Ted. And with that, we'll call it a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to Beat Check with the Oregonian. If you like this show, give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. Tell a friend, help spread the word. The best way to support our journalism and stories like this one is with a subscription to Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time.